Thank you. Good morning. Mary Jane Wallner. I'm the chair of the Joint Fiscal Committee of the New Hampshire General Court. And as chair of the Fiscal Committee of the General Court, I find that due to the state of emergency declared by the governor as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, and in accordance with the governor's emergency order number 12, pursuant to Executive Order 2020-04, as extended pursuant to Executive Order 2020-09, this public body is authorized to meet electronically. Please note that there is no physical location to observe and listen contemporaneously to this meeting, which was authorized pursuant to the governor's emergency order. However, in accordance with the emergency order, I am confirming that we are, one, providing public access to the meeting by telephone, with additional access possibilities by video or other electronic means. We are utilizing VAST conference for this remote meeting. All members of the committee and the staff of state agencies with agenda items have the ability to communicate contemporaneously during this meeting and through this platform. And the public has access to contemporaneously listen and, if necessary, participate in this meeting through dialing the following phone number: 1-800-356-8278 and the 6-digit conference code 125563, followed by the pound sign. And 2, by providing public notice of the necessary information for accessing the meeting. We previously gave notice to the meeting, to the public, of the necessary information for accessing the meeting electronically. Instructions have also been provided in the House and Senate calendars and the Fiscal Committee agenda and the website of the Office of Legislative Budget Assistance. 3, providing a mechanism for the public to alert the public body during the meeting if there are problems with access. If anyone has a problem, please email nheoc@dos.nh.gov. Adjourning the meeting if the public is unable to access the meeting. In the event that the public is unable to access the meeting, the meeting will be adjourned and rescheduled. Please note that all votes are taken at this meeting. All votes taken at this meeting will be by roll call. Today, I have invited the regular fiscal committee substitutes to participate and to join in the questions during this meeting. So, when the clerk calls the roll, could he please include them in the roll call? And let's start the meeting by taking a roll attendance. When each member states their presence, please also state whether there is anyone in the room with you during this meeting, which is required under the right to know law. And I'll ask the clerk to call the roll. Thank you.
Representative Wallner.
Representative Wallner is here. I'm at my home in Concord, New Hampshire, and I am alone.
Representative Leishman.
Good morning, Representative Weiler. I am at my home in Milford, and I'm alone.
Representative Ford.
Thank you. Representative Weiler, I am home in my house at Easton, and I am alone.
Representative Weiler, I am in the living the dining room alone in my home in Kingston. Representative Ober.
I'm home. I'm alone.
Alternate Representative Hewitt.
Representative Weiler, Representative Hewitt is here. I'm in my home and I am alone.
Alternate Representative Lovejoy.
Good morning. I am here in my home in Stratham, and I'm alone.
Alternate Representative Hennessy.
Representative Hennessy, I'm in my home in Littleton with my two minor children.
Senator D'Alessandro.
Senator D'Alessandro, I'm at home in Manchester by myself. And Kenny, great to hear your voice. Glad you're feeling better. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Lou. Representative Susie, excuse me, Senator President Susie. Senator Susie, I did not hear a reply. Senator Kahn. Senator Kahn, I did not hear a reply.
Representative Wyler, this is Donna Susie. I am here at my home in Manchester, and I am alone.
Thank you.
Senator
Kahn.
Senator Kahn in Stoddard and alone.
Thank you. Senator Rosenwald.
I am home alone, and it is great to hear your voice again, Representative Wyler.
Thank you, Cindy. Senator Morse.
So thank you, Representative Wyler, and it's great to hear your voice in my office in Atkinson alone.
Thank you very much. The roll call is completed. All are present.
Thank you, Representative Wyler. And yes, it is great to hear your voice back again. So today is a special meeting, and we've asked Mr. Kane, the Legislative Budget Assistant, to give us a briefing today on the funding that's come into the state of New Hampshire for the COVID-19 emergency. If everyone can mute their line and use the star, the 5-star, if you'd like to speak. We can hear rustling and papers and activity in the background. So if everyone can mute their line, and then if you want to speak, use the 5-star, and then you'll be recognized. And I think that'll help a lot with the background noise. So Mr. Kane is going to do a presentation. I think we all got some information from him last night, with sort of an outline of what he's going to go over. We also have with us today people from from a number of the agencies that if we want to ask more specific questions, they will be available. And what I'd like to do is have Mr. Kane go through his presentation, and then after his presentation, we'll be open for questions, and we can also bring in people from the agencies at that point to get in more in-depth information about the funding and what's happening at the agencies. And I think at this point, I will ask Mr. Kane to proceed with his presentation, unless there's questions or other things that members need at this point. Hearing none, I will ask Mr. Kane to start his presentation. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michael Kane. I'm the Legislative Budget Assistant, and I am here at my home in Warner. So I had emailed the members a copy of the briefing this morning, as well as posted it on our website for the public and membership. It was sent out early this morning because, as you know, COVID-19 expenditures are changing on a daily basis. I just want to thank the agencies, Gopher HHS, Employment Security, all the agencies of health, education, et cetera, for providing the information both on the Gopher website and to me for any additional questions. So I'm going to run through the presentation pretty brief. Go over high level, and then I have invited the agencies here, which I appreciate their participation. They'll be able to answer any specific questions that you have, since they have been the ones involved in the day-to-day activities relative to COVID-19. So I'm going to begin on page one. This is the summary of the CARES Coronavirus Relief Fund allocation. This is also referred to as so-called CARES Flex Fund. This is the amount of money that the Gopher Committee, or the Gopher Office, has been working with the advisory boards and the governor to distribute out to various entities. What you'll see on this page are two columns, first column being the commitments to date. So this is as of yesterday or as of this morning. The allocation, again, $1.25 billion from the federal government that has to be used on COVID-related activity and expenses. You can see, I'm going to run through quickly, Emergency Health Care System Relief Fund. The governor has provided $100 million towards that currently, which includes $50 million towards hospitals and other health care providers, which was one of his first executive orders, and then executive order number 44, another $30 million to long-term care providers, another $20 million to all other health care providers. In the gray column, you will see that the Gopher Legislative Advisory Board had proposed $20 million for long-term care providers and another $40 million for all other health care providers. You'll see $150 million for hospitals and other health care providers. What the Legislative Advisory Board had recommended is, in addition to the $50 million under Executive Order 9, to add another $100 million of assistance to hospitals. So that was the advisory proposal, and you'll see in the white column what has been committed to date. First responder and frontline stipend program is $24 million. The Legislative Advisory Board had recommended $25 million. This first responder stipend program is available to full and part-time law enforcement, corrections officers, as well as line personnel, firefighters, and EMS. In addition, about $500,000 is relative to child and adult protective service workers and juvenile justice and parole officers. Long-term care stabilization program, $75 million, which was committed by the governor prior to the Legislative Advisory Board, but it is recognized by the Legislative Advisory Board for that stabilization program, which is a stipend program for everyone in a working with Medicaid-eligible individuals who can't work remotely, so anyone with face-to-face contact with individuals. And that's both state and that's both private and county. Municipal and county COVID cost reimbursement program, $40 million. That was the Gopher Legislative Advisory Board proposal based on the governor's announcement of that $40 million, $32 million to municipal and $8 million to county. And that can be used for, it's allocated based on a formula that you can find on the Gopher website. And that's the cap amount of money that's available to municipalities and counties that has to be used for COVID-related expenditures. Anything not related used for COVID-related expenditures is subject to treatment by U.S. Treasury. So I know the Gopher is going to be keeping an eye on those. And so that's more of a reimbursement program. New Hampshire Agriculture Grants. See the Legislative Advisory Board proposal of $5 million. And what was actually committed by the governor is $10 million for agriculture grants, $4.5 million of which will go to dairy farmers, another $1.5 million towards fruit, vegetable, ornamental plants. That's a typo, I do apologize. Maple syrup growers and producers, anyone with revenue, I believe it is, of $50,000 a year or more for those producers would be eligible for a grant. On a pro rata basis. And then putting aside another $4 million of stability emergency grants, more of a reserve if there's any issues with food supply. And that's something that the Department of Agriculture will be working on through December to monitor that issue. New Hampshire Food Bank grant, you can see that the Legislative Advisory Board proposed $5 million, and the governor has committed $2 million to emergency grants. And then another $3 million to be held in reserve for the purpose of addressing the food bank. So the $5 million is equal to what the advisory board proposed. New Hampshire Child Care Relief, the advisory board proposed $25 million. The governor has committed $20 million for emergency funding and holding another $5 million in reserve for providing that $25 million to that purpose. For public higher education system grants, the Legislative Advisory Board had proposed $20 million. The governor has so far committed $10 million to the University System of New Hampshire and $5 million for the Community College System of New Hampshire. And this has to be used for COVID-related remote learning at UNH, any other COVID-related expenses. At CCSNH, they do have a lot of hands-on training, back to the lab, I believe it's called, that their $5 million grant can go to help support them. Nonprofit Emergency Relief and Recovery Fund, the Legislative Advisory Board had proposed $30 million. The commitment from the governor is $60 million. And those, the requirements and process of that program is still ongoing. I think that should be released by June 5th to all the nonprofits who are impacted by COVID and the guidelines released by June 5th. Main Street Relief Fund, the Governor's Legislative Advisory Board proposal had recommended about $100 million for small business grants. The governor has committed $400 million for that purpose. This is something that the governor's office, as well as DRA, which will be on the call today to answer any specific questions, provide to those businesses in New Hampshire with revenues of $20 million or under. I know that the Gopher and that the involved parties at the state level will be looking at that $20 million threshold to see if it should be lowered, as well as is the $400 million sufficient or, you know, an appropriate level, depending on the need. Businesses need to apply for these grants by tomorrow to be eligible. So there is it's kind of a preliminary eligibility period where businesses will have to submit, their receipts for the year and what they're requesting so that the Gopher can actually understand the need that's out there. So that's something that's still ongoing. But businesses, in order to be eligible for any of these grants, need to apply, preliminarily at least, by tomorrow. So Business Finance Authority, Safe Harbor Forgivable Loans, $30 million. That is a loan program to businesses as they need it. And the other thing to keep in mind is there are various federal funds that we'll get to at the end of my presentation that Gopher is monitoring to make sure that these CARE funds are being used to those entities or businesses that aren't double dipping, to make sure they're being used for a separate purpose, that if they did receive funds from any other source, that they at least disclose that to Gopher so they can understand the full meaning. And that goes for any entity. Agency COVID expenses not covered by FEMA, about $50 million is what's committed by the governor. At the time, the Legislative Advisory Board had estimated about $65 million rounded of what the agencies had committed so far. So on May 11th, when this proposal, they had spent about $65 million. And what the governor had committed is $50 million because the majority or a lot of this money, at least almost half, can be covered by FEMA. And that's another process that Gopher is looking at, to not allocate CARES funds in the Legislative Advisory Board as well, not allocate these coronavirus relief funds if there's other assistance also available, just so you don't double count. Oversight and federally mandated expenses, right now committed is about $8 million. The Gopher Office, the Governor's Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery, the administration portion is about $2.2 million of Gopher funds, of CRS funds, that will be used for administration, and then another approximately $5.78 million for various central services from other agencies that are allowable use of CARES funds, financial and compliance audits, a big single state audit, and any other mandated costs as a result of CARES funds has been set aside for this purpose. Emergency Child Protection and Domestic Violence Relief, a couple of first executive orders, 21 and 22, I believe. Emergency Child Protective Order, about $2.1 million, which has been set aside by the governor, and another $600,000 domestic and sexual violence relief fund of $600,000, and rounded up to another $273,000 for other costs. At the time, Legislative Advisory Board did not recommend that, only because I believe there was, they needed clarification of whether or not this was going to be handled within the current budget or if it would be additional funds. Just lost my screen. So in total, the Legislative Advisory Board had recommended about $600 million of the $1.25 billion of CARES fund be distributed, and then another $650,000 rounded would be held in reserve for future needs at the time. What the governor, based on his commitments to date, $845 million has been committed, leaving about $405 million of uncommitted CARES funds right now. And the biggest one, obviously, is the Main Street relief for those businesses. If I continue on to page two, I had mentioned earlier the agency COVID expenses not covered by FEMA. Department of Health and Human Services has been preparing a daily report on state agency COVID-19 expenditures, not only for their department, but also pulling information from other departments, and then posting this on the Gopher website, which has a great supply of documents for COVID expenditures. So you can see Health and Human Services related costs are about $85.5 million. The first two are what we had previously mentioned above, but another $1.6 million in personnel, $1.8 million in operating, almost $64.5 million in personal protective equipment, another $14.8 million for surge-related costs. All other departments, administrative services, other agencies, in total, COVID-related expenditures for personnel, about almost $5 million, operating costs, about $6.9. For employment security, personnel costs of about $4.2 million and operating costs about $993,000, for a total of about $5.2. This does not include unemployment insurance costs that are reimbursed from the federal government, which we will get to in another slide. But this is just a specific personnel security. Also does not include the even under fiscal committee decisions and item on the grant. From the U.S. Department of Labor for the IT-related costs. Department of Safety personnel costs about $2.7 million, operating costs about $700,000. And then Department of Education, DOE personnel costs about $449,000, DOE operating costs about $14,000. And Department of Military and Veterans Affairs personnel costs about $126,000, operating costs about $20,000. So in total, based on this daily expenditure report, about $106.7 million has been spent relative to COVID, of which almost $56 million of that is reimbursable to FEMA. This is the leftover. I mean, you can see, if you go back to the previous, the $50 million of non-FEMA, not covered by FEMA amount, this would be part of that. And then for one of the largest programs, or the largest impacts on COVID has been with unemployment. Obviously, the unemployment numbers have increased significantly, as well as various enhancements that have been passed by the federal government. You can see relative to the federal pandemic unemployment compensation, about $383.5 million has been provided as of 5/28, so as of today. Or as of yesterday. The payments represent the $600 enhancement added to the weekly benefits, which are from April 4th through July 25th. Now, this is going to be 100% federally paid and is drawn down from a federal account, so it won't show up as a grant on the final document that you'll see we have, because this is a drawdown based on the need. So almost $383.5 million for that additional $600. In addition, suspended waiting week, reimbursement from the Department of Labor for benefit payments paid during the first week of eligibility because the state had suspended the waiting week is about $25.4 million, and that is 100% federally reimbursed to the state trust fund. Again, not a hit on the CARES fund, the 1.25, or any of the further federal funds down below. Federal Pandemic Unemployment Assistance is about $84.3 million. And this is payments to individuals eligible for the expanded unemployment insurance program during the first 26 weeks of eligibility. One or the other, they're either the state unemployment benefit or the federal benefit. So this is the additional amount relative to that. Emergency administrative grant, this was received on the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. This is the 4.4 that's being used for administrative and IT costs in connection with pandemic. You'll remember seeing an item similar to this that came through fiscal. So almost $500 million of the additional unemployment insurance expenses that the Department of Employment Security will receive federal reimbursement from various sources. And then the final part of our kind of my briefing before turning it open for questions and for the agency to answer specifics is just a sheet that we've been updating. The numbers change almost daily of everything that New Hampshire has received. And you can see the first on page 4, the coronavirus, about $1.25 billion. That's everything that you've seen on page 1 of the document. That's the so-called flex fund. And then all the various other areas of funding, I won't read through all of them, but you'll notice education, the governor's fund, that was the education aid that came through fiscal as an informational item, K through 12 aid that has gone based on a Title I aid formula to cities and towns. Higher education fund has gone to the individual institutions, both public and private, to help out with COVID-related costs and students. And then a couple other higher education, smaller distributions to the IHEs or institutions of higher education. Administration for families, for children and families, or ACF, child care and development block grant of about $7 million, low-income energy assistance of about 6.7, and Head Start of about 1.3. And so what you'll see in these documents are the amount in thousands, so that would, and then the primary recipient, whether or not it's a state, local, or other entity. And then I won't read through all of these. I'll kind of stop at a few of them. You can see CDC grants. You remember initially HHS came in, I believe it was in March for the first $5 million roughly that they were going to get relative to respond to COVID before the legislature actually suspended activity. And then another $5.4 million in additional CDC grant. You'll see the CDC testing fund of about $61 million that I know Governor Senator Shaheen had a press release relative to those testing funds. Housing Resources and Services Administration, Health Resources and Services Administration, about $6.8 million to community health centers, one of their largest ones, $2.4 million for testing capacity. You'll see a couple at the bottom there that went to health professional schools directly. And then on page 5, the emergency grants in mental and substance use disorder and SAMHSA, $2 million that was provided to states. You saw that as an informational item under fiscal. One of the larger items on the sheet, you'll see the $164.6 million from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services offices of the Secretary. This is for provider relief funds to both hospitals and other healthcare providers. The first allocation, $164 million. And then an additional allocation to rural providers of another $115 million. And so these are the different pots of money that Gopher and the advisory boards needed to be aware of as they're trying to determine what to recommend for allocation, because there are, as you'll see, several pots of money out there that do help certain entities or individuals. I'll just go pretty quick so we can go for the agencies. You'll see the Community Development Block Grant on page 5, Community Development Block Grant for state and local, about $2 million to locals, about another almost $10 million to the state for those block grants. In the Department of Transportation, you'll see at the bottom of page 5, a general distribution of about 24 non-urbanized area grant with specific program about 13.7. And then grants in aid to airports, including Manchester Regional, at about 15.2, and that went directly to the airports. And then on the final page, independent agencies, election security, the Secretary of State has received, that's about $3.2 million in federal funds. And Institute of Museum and Library Services, $123,000. National Endowment for Arts and Humanities, also a few hundred thousand dollars apiece that you saw as informational items. And so for total grant funding that includes the CARES or the CARES CRS funds, $1.25 billion, almost $1.8 billion. So almost an additional $600 million in additional federal funds available to various entities throughout the state on top of the 1.25 that Gopher is keeping track of. On top of that, you do have the $500 million from the unemployment insurance. So that's almost 2.3, that's a significant number, almost 2.3 million of federal assistance to New Hampshire, almost as large as our general fund operating budget. It's a pretty significant dollar amount. And then in addition to the other programs, the non-grant funding, so these are loans provided to small businesses, majority. You can see almost $2 billion for the Paycheck Protection Program through April 16th, and then an additional distribution of about $2.5 billion to small businesses for Paycheck Protection Program, and then an additional $128 million for economic injury disaster loans, and then another $46,000 on top of that. So almost $170,000 between those two. And then the Federal Reserve has a program. It's called the Municipal Liquidity Facility. This is kind of it's a loan program, or not even a loan program. It really helps with bonding if states wanted to take advantage of that. They have not taken advantage of that. They are cash. They're in kind of a good, even though revenues are down, they're in a good situation relative to cash on hand. They have not taken taken this allocation yet, and municipalities have not contacted the state that I'm aware of, although other agencies on the line. So in total, the non-grant funding alone, Paycheck Protection and Economic Injury, was almost $5.6 billion. So between the 1.8 and the grant funding, the another $500 million roughly for unemployment insurance so far, so the 2.3 and the 5.6 roughly, you're almost close to $8 billion. Of funds that the state has, state entities have received from the federal government in the various packages that have passed. And another thing I just wanted to mention, it's not on this presentation, but you may have tuned into Ways and Means. HUS Ways and Means actually had some briefings from various agencies on revenues, so the impact on the current fiscal year for 20. And then 21, and they're currently working within the committees to come up with revised estimates from the House side on where they think revenues will be. I think one of the most significant one will be your business taxes, obviously, but also your meals and rooms taxes, which have almost haven't stopped completely, but 70 to 80% decline in meals and rooms revenue, and so you do have. Revenue sources that from DRA only that could be in the $160 million plus underplanned for 20, which hasn't been accounted for. Obviously, there's a lot of activity that occurs in June that the committee still needs to see, that DRA needs to see, because there were some delayed payments from the initial filing dates that they have to monitor that activity and come up with some estimates. But just DRA alone is about DRA collected revenues is about $167 million. On top of that, you have the other agencies, lottery down a little bit, liquor down a little bit. Insurance is actually up, but you have various other decreases. You could have potentially a $200 million, I think it was discussed yesterday, shortfall in revenues, general and education trust fund, just for 20. But again, it's very early. We do have to see how things pay up, especially with the delay. As you know, a lot of New Hampshire taxes are looked back from the prior year's activities, and then also any adjustments from the businesses as far as payments of when they want to pay that. Really, your biggest impact is your FY21 impact, and that's something that the committee will probably provide a range, at least House Ways and Means, a range of where they think that would be. But that's your significant impact. That could be an additional 300 or plus, hopefully minus, of revenue impact. Because you do have amongst the various sources, you're talking between 15 and 30 plus percent decreases in your revenue sources mostly your meals and rooms in your businesses, and then your lag in your interest and dividends for 21, as well as your real estate transfer. So I just recommend that the committee members, if they get a chance, to go onto the General Court website, and there is a not only you'll see a recording of the agency work sessions yesterday with Ways and Means, but a lot of the documents that they provided. And New Hampshire Fiscal Policy Institute, Bill Slutton, did a great presentation on kind of what New Hampshire's, what the impact on the economy is for New Hampshire. Again, unpredictable, because we don't know how quick we're going to come out of this and when things are going to get back to the new normal. But it is some great information. I just wanted to mention that before I stop a portion of my presentation. There are agencies here. So if I just mentioned, press 5-star if you do have questions, and then Fallon can recognize you. In addition, the agencies that are on the line, depending on the question, if they want to press 5-star so Fallon can recognize who will answer the question, that will be helpful, and I'll answer anything I can. So that's my briefing, and then I'll turn it over to the committee and agencies for the question and answer portion.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kane. I think that was very informative. And thank you for the materials that you provided us. Let's open for the committee to ask questions. Remember the 5-star.
Senator Kahn has his hand raised.
Senator Kahn, yes.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, and glad to get some question started. I have two. One is relative to the unemployment insurance pool of funds, the $500 million that was as a part of Mr. Payne's presentation. We began this crisis at the end of February, I believe, with a fund balance in our state unemployment insurance at around $300 million. And I'm wondering if the federal $500 million identified here is the commitment in total through May, or at least the date in May noted, or have we also drawn down on that unemployment insurance balance?
Okay. I think employment security is on the line, so your question is, not only the $500 million, which is the federal portion, but what has the state committed from their unemployment trust fund as well. So if someone from Employment Security here, they can provide a better
Yes, Senator, this is Rich Lavers, Deputy Commissioner at Employment Security. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for all the good work you're doing.
Thank you for that comment. So, good question regarding the state of the trust fund. So we started at $300 million. When we factor in the various benefit programs that are federally paid right now and what is state paid, we are at about $251 million currently in our trust fund account. The funds that are continue to be borne entirely by the state trust fund are those individuals that are filing as a result of a temporary layoff, temporary closure from their employer. The CARES Act still requires that states pay those benefits out of their trust fund. Other individuals that are unemployed directly related to a CARES Act reason that's articulated in the CARES Act for the various COVID-19 scenarios. Those benefits are what you see reflected in the pandemic unemployment assistance line for about $84.3 million. So those folks are being paid benefits in parallel with folks that are being paid benefits out of the state trust fund. Those are the individuals that are receiving benefits that are newly unemployed. The breakdown that we are seeing right now, percentage-wise, for the newly unemployed is about 52% are being paid with state unemployment dollars, and about 48% being paid with PUA federal dollars. And again, all of that is driven by the reason for separation that the individual indicates on their initial claim and then as they file their weekly claims. And I can answer any other questions that you might have regarding any of that, Senator.
Right. I you know, while you're five-starred, how many people are still awaiting that have filed, are still awaiting some determination? I continue to get a few every week drifting in, but they're obviously the intensity of their need is now 10 weeks further along. So you have a general number that you can share with us so that I don't think that it's just these couple of people. Because I gather from their cases that there's a certain category that's, and I've heard you speak, that's not getting, not easily attended to, and but I don't have a sense of what that total looks like.
Yeah, so currently, Senator, we're paying about 95% of active claims. So you have folks that file their initial claim, and then a smaller percentage than historically actually from those initial claims then file weekly claims. So people that are filing active claims, 95% are being paid. Those that aren't being paid, and that's where our focus continues to be, tend to be more complicated cases as a result of requirements, are not only driven by the federal government, but with our own state requirements, we need to thoroughly look at some of the elements of their claim to make sure that those individuals are eligible, because you still have situations, even though we have broadened eligibility and we've lowered the thresholds for prior earnings and work attachment in order to be eligible, you still have individuals that are not eligible for benefits right now. So we need to look at that. We also need to look at some particular circumstances that you see on claims. The ones that have been difficult to resolve, the biggest group of those are individuals that have earnings from multiple states. We have been recently reminded by U.S. Department of Labor that we cannot shortcut the federal required process on confirming that those individuals aren't filing against multiple states simultaneously. So we need to make sure that with those types of claims that you are reaching out using the federal process for getting wages from those other states. In some instances, the individual would have eligibility in that other state, and they need to be provided with the option of which state they want to collect against. A lot of those are individuals that have wages in Massachusetts. Massachusetts has higher weekly benefit amounts, so we really need to make sure to present those options to individuals, and that does result in a delay. Not a delay that's attributed to New Hampshire, but a delay that is oftentimes attributed to the other states. We are currently working with all of the New England states to try to identify some of the problems that we've been experiencing with Massachusetts and other states have been to try to expedite those claims. Other cases that can delay payment include those folks that are working while they're collecting, and those folks that receive a large payout at the time of their separation, either through cashing in their accrued PTO or some other sort of severance payment. That delays their eligibility based upon the size of the payment and then the earnings that someone could have while engaged in part-time work while still being able to file for unemployment. Those earnings need to be calculated to determine whether or not that person still has a benefit rate for that week. So those remaining 5% of active filers, we have on a daily basis, we still are redeploying our resources to the areas of most need and making sure that we continue to get through all of those claims as quickly as we can. We do obviously those that we deal with that are in a hardship situation, we escalate those right away so we can get those individuals taken care of. We've actually had staff that have driven and hand-delivered checks to individuals because of various types of hardship. But the way that we're going about adjudicating those claims is exactly the way that we're required to by federal government and our own state law. When you start to shortcut some of those eligibility reviews is when you start seeing problems like other states have been experiencing. I'm sure folks saw the reports out of Washington State over the holiday weekend where they had reported having paid hundreds of millions of dollars to foreign bad actors who had been able to submit fraudulent claims. You have not seen New Hampshire's name in those headlines, in those articles yet, and we want to make sure that we don't. So we want to make sure that we continue to properly evaluate all of those claims. Despite having followed the process, we are still ahead of where we were during the Great Recession, even though the volume that we're currently experiencing far and away anything we ever experienced during the Great Recession.
Thank you. So around 5,000-6,000 cases are still pending. Chairman, if I could ask just one more, and I will silence.
Yes, yes, please.
And thank you, Assistant Commissioner. This one is more for the Main Street Relief or the not-for-profit relief funds. And the end date for the CARES Act funds says December 31st. And I'm wondering if that end date also applies to the grant funds that are, the guidelines are still being developed. There's a process for application and award. Will that December 31st deadline also apply to those two programs and the businesses or not-for-profits that receive those funds?
Hey, Senator, I think we, for the Main Street, we do have staff from Gopher listening in who may be able to answer some of those questions as far as timeline. I do believe it is December 31st, but we could have Gopher weigh in. And then as far as Main Street, they can weigh in on that as well. And just so you know, Commissioner Steph is here since she is involved or on the line. She is involved in the Main Street program for businesses. So, Fallon, I don't know if someone from Gopher or DRA can answer any of those.
Yes, Commissioner Little, I believe, is on, and his line's open.
Thank you, Fallon. Good morning, Chairwoman Waller and members of the Joint Legislative Fiscal Committee. This is Jerry Little. Usually before you as Commissioner of the Bank Department on reassignment to the Governor's Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery, serving here at the time being as Director. I am in the Gopher office, which we're sharing space with the business, with the BEA at this point in time. In the room with me are Matthew Smith, who is our General Counsel, Rhonda Hensley, Lisa English, Steve Giovanelli, John Frazier, and Sean Thomas. We are around a 26-foot-long conference table and socially distancing at this point in time. The answer to your question, Senator Kahn, is that all of the CARES Act Flex funds must be distributed and expensed no later than December 30, not 31st, December 30 of 2020, and that applies to both of the programs you have mentioned, the Main Street Relief Program as well as the nonprofit program.
Thank you. Do you have a question?
No, that has answered the question and speaks to the how quickly those dollars need to get out and how prepared those entities need to be to put those into play. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Little. Do we have further questions?
Senator Rosenwald has her hand raised.
Senator Rosenwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions, but I think my first one is for Mr. Kane. And thank you for this briefing, Mike. I think the public's very interested in exactly where the CARES Act funds are going and what the specific purposes are. So I'm wondering if you believe that we will start to see reporting under RSA 9F:1 by June 15th, and that would require reporting in quite a bit of detail as to who and when and what accounting units, class codes, are getting the money. Do you expect that June 15th will be the first report?
I'll have to reach out to Administrative Services, who kind of does run that. So what Senator Rosenwald's referring to is a check register that Transparent New Hampshire, so it's newhampshire.gov/transparentnewhampshire, does provide a monthly update on all state expenditures. There's one component of where the money goes is the area that's the so-called check register or state expenditure register that does have that list. Senator, let me reach out to Administrative Services and get back to the committee via email on what their plan is. Is their plan to also include in that any CARES funds, CRF funds distributed, which would include organizations or entities that receive the funds? There are some redacted, information that needs to be redacted. I know the Gopher office does have some relative to the healthcare, or at least the health care system relief fund, who's received those. And may pose that question. Let me pose that question to Administrative Services, but I may want Gopher to kind of maybe comment on reports they plan to issue going forward once these grants go out, if that's okay with Gopher to comment on that.
Yes. I mean, as I read 9F1, it doesn't seem to give discretion to the Department of Admin Services about whether or not they will report. Seems like it's required.
Right. And I'll just tie in.
Okay. Thank you. Madam Chair, I have a few questions of the Department of Health and Human Services, if they're on the call.
Yes, thank you. And is someone from Health and Human Services available?
Yes, I believe Karen Grounds is on.
Great.
Hi, Karen, and thank you, Madam Chair. The $25 million or $20 million that's going out as emergency relief to the child care centers, how quickly is that going to be getting out to these centers? It's my understanding that we've lost about 80% of the capacity, and we need to get child care up and running again fast so parents can go back to work.
I don't have a date for that, but I can definitely get you that information. Mary Calise is also on the line. I don't know if she has the date for that.
No, I do not.
Okay. All right. We'll get that information to you, Senator.
Thanks, Karen.
I know they're actively working on it.
Of course. I'm also curious about some of the healthcare emergency relief funds. I've noticed that there have been some zero interest loans that could be turned into grants that have gone to private medical practices and also for-profit healthcare companies. And at the same time, I read in the paper the other day that our biggest hospital system in the state and our only academic medical center, Dartmouth-Hitchcock, had to go and borrow and get commercial credit at a 2% loan rate. I think they borrowed something like $10 million. So I'm just curious how the decisions were made to give zero interest loans that could be forgiven to private entities and not to our nonprofit hospitals.
Sure. So, but as a member of the review committee, I can speak a little bit to our process and also direct you to some information that's online as to our process. And so we looked at the applicants that were considered frontline COVID applicants and reviewed their responses to the questions and scored them, as well as asked for some additional information from several of the applicants. And that's how the decisions were made. And then the committee made recommendations to the governor, and then the governor would approve or not approve those recommendations. So that's how the process has worked. As far as for-profit versus nonprofit, you know, we didn't really add weight for, you know, for it being a nonprofit or a for-profit. We really looked at the services they were providing from a frontline COVID perspective, and also, like I said, their current financial situation.
Have you released any of the scoring?
I don't know the answer to that question. That I think it would be the governor's office that would need to release that.
Uh-huh. Okay. And one more question, if I might, Madam Chair.
Right.
A couple of fiscals ago, we talked about some of the cash flow transfers that the department had made. I believe it was $8 million out of substance use disorder treatment rates, $4 million out of the state loan repayment for healthcare workers, the CURE site unit funding, homeless, low-income senior drug assistance. And at the last meeting, the department said that there had not been a reversal of any of these transfers at that point. So I'm just asking that question again. Have any of these transfers been reversed, or are they standing as cuts?
So no, none of them have been reversed, and no, none of them are currently being considered for cuts. What I would also share with you is that we did transfer I don't remember the exact amount, but we transferred, I think it's around $17 million into the FEMA account from that original Class 103 class to serve as the FEMA match. We're now hearing from the president that we can potentially use CARES Act funding as the match for FEMA. We're waiting for final direction on that, so that would then move those general funds back again. As you can imagine, there's a lot of moving parts right now, but nothing has been transferred back to its original place.
But you're still hoping to?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Rosenwald. Are there further questions of the Department of Health and Human Services? It might be since they're on the line. Do any other members?
Senator,
I would also let you know that I have Perry Plummer here with me if there are questions that pertain to the emergency management side.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any other questions for Health and Human Services?
Senator Susie has her hand raised. I'm not sure if it's for HHS, but her line's open.
Senator Susie?
Actually, it was a question for Deputy Commissioner Labors, so I can wait for the appropriate
time. Okay, well,
we can.
I do have one for Health and Human Services myself. If I could, maybe I'll just ask that one now. I was sort of surprised to hear that people working at New Hampshire Hospital were not getting the hazard pay that was happening in other parts of state government. I wondered if there was a reason for that and if someone could comment on why the workers at New Hampshire Hospital are not receiving that extra bonus payment.
I believe that's because they're considered a hospital, and hospitals in the state are not receiving the stipend payment. Glencliff is, however, as a long-term care facility.
So even though it's a state-run psychiatric hospital, it's not received. They are not receiving it. Okay.
Correct. It's a hospital.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions for Health and Human Services? Okay. Senator Susie, again, you and Mr. Labors, is that who you'd like to have come back?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, if he's available.
Okay. Is Mr. Labors still on the phone?
Yes, his line's open.
Okay, great.
Thank you. My question was regarding data, and I want to first say, of course, I do appreciate the work of the department, the challenges, the stress, and despite all of that, continues to, I think, produce good results for the citizens of New Hampshire and works through the areas where they've had issues. But in particular, I know I had requested this because I've seen it from several other states. I wondered if it was possible to provide information by gender of those who are experiencing and filing claims.
Yes, Madam President. So based on that request, I have a query from the system looking both at the gender breakdown for initial claim filers and also the and seeing your request and then looking at other information that we capture on the initial claim, I was also going to include the number of initial claim filers that indicated having a dependent. That is, I will follow up with the vendor to find out the status of that query. I apologize for not having gotten that to you sooner.
No problem. Thank you very much. I look forward to reviewing it. Thanks so much.
Commissioner. Okay. Further questions from the committee?
I'm not showing any other hands.
No other hands at this time? No other questions? Then, if there are no other questions from committee members, I will move on to setting the time of our next meeting. So this was a special meeting. Yes. Yes.
Sorry. Mike Kane has his hand raised.
Oh, Mr. Kane.
Sure. I did, before you leave, I did just want to follow up with Senator Rosenwald. I did reach out to Administrative Services, but in the meantime, I did look on the Transparent New Hampshire website, and it does appear all transactions are in there. I will email a link to, when I say all transactions through April 30th, I'll email the link to the members because there's ways you can choose your fiscal year and your vendor. So if you're looking for a specific vendor, you can click on that, and then it provides the detail down to what program that they received that for. So I did just want to update you on that. And then the fiscal meeting has been set already for Friday, June 12th at 10 a.m. And that's all I wanted to share.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay. Seeing no other hands up or any other comments from committee members? Seeing none, our next is, as Mr. Kane just said, our next meeting will be Friday, June 12th at 10 o'clock. And this is our regular meeting, so we will have our agenda will be posted, and I assume we'll have quite a number of agenda items on that day. So seeing no other business to come before the committee, I'll adjourn the special meeting of the fiscal committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.